Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the exchange, feel free. Phone numbers are as follows, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Just looking at our fictional depictions of wolves in the Western world should give you some idea of the reputation we've given the animal. The Big Bad Wolf, Little Red Riding Hood, Peter and the Wolf. Literature is brimming with tales of these ruthless killers, which wolf experts insist they are not, certainly not with humans. But decades after we hunted the wolves to the vanishing point in much of their range, they're back. Back in numbers great enough for the federal government to consider rolling back protection for the gray wolf under the Endangered Species Act. There's been a predictable response from environmental groups, including Cascadia Wildlands, where Josh Laughlin is the campaign director and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good. Good to have you here. I understand that Cascadia Wildlands is part of the Pacific Wolf Coalition. How many different organizations are part of that coalition?
The coalition is made up of approximately 35 organizations across the three states in the Pacific West, that being California, Oregon, and Washington, and came together about 2 years ago to create a unified voice to support gray wolf recovery as they begin to reoccupy some of their historic habitats here in the Pacific West.
So give us the history lesson, because the wolves were pretty much erased from much of the landscape. There hasn't been a wolf in California other than OR7 since, what, the 1930s or 1940s?
Yeah. There's a real sordid history with the gray wolf extermination here in the, actually across the country. It's not just limited here to the Pacific West. There was a systematic eradication program to silence the landscape of the gray wolf. They were seen as a critter that was incompatible with manifest destiny as the West was developed, and they were poisoned, shot, and trapped till they were, again, systematically exterminated. And now we're in the midst of a real exciting wildlife recovery success story as wolves begin to repopulate places like Oregon, Washington. And as listeners have probably heard, we've had a lone wolf pop in and out of California over the last year and a half.
Which is the wolf known as OR7, which split off from the pack in northeastern Oregon and is still wandering around the region and drawing lots of attention. OR7, though, is just one wolf. But the fact is that they have shown some tenacity in recovery. I mean, the Oregon wolves are here because they swam the Snake River, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Give wolves time and human tolerance, and they'll do their thing. They're incredibly fecund, meaning they reproduce pretty rapidly. And, yeah, we've back here in Oregon, we've got seven packs after, again, the systematic extermination program. In Washington, we've got 12 packs. Notably, three of them in Washington are in the Washington Cascades. Here in Oregon, we don't have any known packs in the Cascades yet. They're all concentrated in northeast Oregon. And, of course, we've got the lone wolf OR7, or Journey, as it's been dubbed, who migrated across the entire state from northeast Oregon down into Northern California and has been calling that Soda Mountain Wilderness area east of Ashland home for a little while.
So when did the federal government begin working in earnest to bring gray wolves back, and so what were some of the components of the recovery program?
Yeah, well, there's been a real strong interest from the American public to see this iconic animal restored back across across the landscape after the systematic extermination. It was the first species listed under the Endangered Species Act, which compelled the federal government to see the animal restored and recovered. And in 1995 and 1996, approximately 66 wolves were captured just across the border in Canada and reintroduced into Yellowstone National Park and also into central Idaho. And over the past 15 or so years, the wolf population in the Northern Rockies has greatly rebounded, and as expected, wolves have begun to disperse into adjacent states like Oregon and Washington, and of course the lone wolf that's gone down to California. And we're just in that beginning stages of recovery here in the Pacific West.
Much has been said about the effect of reintroducing wolves in places like Yellowstone, where because they're controlling the, or at least keeping an eye on the elk population, that some of the vegetation that used to be along stream sides has returned to Yellowstone because the elk are not there browsing out in the open like they did when there were no wolves around. But what are the issues, particularly for humans? I mean, for that matter, historically, what is the relationship between wolves and humans directly?
Sure. Well, you gotta look back to Europe in the 14, 15, 1600s, where wolves were, again, systematically eradicated. They were associated with the werewolf, and great mythology was created that wolves were coming for your children and were going to kidnap your children and so forth. And that mentality persisted as the colonies were settled in the eastern seaboard of the United States in the early 1600s, and we saw that ongoing relationship with wolves where they were persecuted, shot, poisoned, trapped, till they were systematically exterminated. And that relationship, again, continued as Manifest Destiny pushed west and as the United States was settled. So it's been a real rough relationship, and we're really beginning to redefine that relationship. It started back in the 1930s and 40s with the likes of Leopold and Murray and others, and that new ethic, recognizing that the gray wolf has such a important role on the landscape, where it restores balance, keeps the landscape healthy. It's really being embraced and recognized. And again, that's part of why we're starting to see wolves back on the landscape now, because of this new ethic and recognition that they play such a critical role in ecosystem balance.
Josh Lachlan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's with the group Cascadia Wildlands, part of the Pacific Wolf Coalition, and he's the campaign director at Cascadia Wildlands. We're talking about rolling back protections for the gray wolf under the Federal Endangered Species Act. That proposal has been made. A comment period ended just a few days ago. We'll talk about where things go from here. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number is 541-552-6782, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Josh, was there ever a stated objective to restore wolves to their entire historic range?
Well, that's how we understand what the intention of the Endangered Species Act is, to restore wolves or whatever the listed species is that the government's working to recover across its historic range. And it's laughable, and even the top wolf scientists in the country have said it's not supported by science, this proposal to strip federal protections for wolves in places they haven't even returned yet, if you can believe it. Places like Utah and Colorado, where there's substantial suitable habitat for wolves, and they're knocking on the door, dispersing out of states like Wyoming. And the federal government's proposing to strip protections in places where they haven't even returned, like that, or places like California, where we sometimes have one wolf, sometimes have zero wolves if the wolf's up in Oregon. So it's really a premature proposal that's not supported by science and reeks of political expediency, really.
What is the major driver here? Is it people in the ranching business?
Well, you know, the federal government's, let's face it, gray wolf management has been a challenge. It stirs a lot of emotion in all different stakeholders. And the federal government, for a long time, this isn't the first time, they've tried to wash their hands of the gray wolf recovery efforts and hand management off to states. But we're telling them that they need to listen to the science and respond to the mandate of the Federal Endangered Species Act and recover the populations where they existed. And, we look to, you know, species that the success stories of, like the bald eagle, for example. The eagle was taken off the Endangered Species Act when it was genuinely recovered across its range, not when there was just a healthy population in one area So we use that as an example for the federal government to look at and not play politics with this really critical effort that's underway, this gray wolf recovery effort that's underway.
Interesting you bring up the bald eagle, because that really is a success story under the Endangered Species Act. Off the list now, recovered across its entire range, but it's probably certainly helped that it was a national symbol.
Absolutely. And I believe the gray wolf is becoming more and more of a national symbol. You look to recent polling conducted in the country, and 70% of residents in the Pacific West want to see gray wolves returned to their historic landscapes. It's an iconic animal. It embodies the essence of wilderness. People, backpackers and outdoor enthusiasts, will now have the opportunity to hear the howl of a wolf if they head out to the Eagle Cap Wilderness in Oregon, or perhaps hear OR7 howl down in the Klamath Siskiyou ecoregion. It's truly an exciting time, but the recovery job is not done. We're just in the beginning stages of gray wolf recovery here in the Pacific West.
So what are the numbers like at this point, based on and compared with historic numbers of the gray wolf before the extermination started, which really was simultaneous with the arrival of white people in the West, wasn't it?
Yeah, so here in Oregon, we've got seven breeding pairs of wolves, which a breeding pair has a litter of pups every year. And up in Washington, we've got 12 packs. So, we're just starting to see gray wolf packs return in historic places in Oregon and Washington. It's important to recognize we don't have an established pack in the Cascades yet, in the Coast Range, in the Klamath Siskiyou ecoregion. So there's a lot of work to be done still, and it's by all means far too early to even be considering stripping critical protections for this species that need it now more than ever.
Josh Lachlan, our guest again on the Jefferson Exchange from Cascadia Wildlands, where he's the campaign director. He is working on, obviously, the proposal by the federal government to strip protection from the gray wolf in parts of the West, which his group opposes. You can join us on the exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions about gray wolves and their legacy and their protection. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So the comment period just closed, and it sounds like the Wolf Coalition, of which Cascadia Wildlands is a part, managed to deliver a whole bunch of comments.
Yeah, we really galvanized a lot of the population in the Pacific West here to show the Obama administration there's widespread support for ongoing protections for gray wolves. About 100,000 community members sent a clear message to the administration saying maintain critical protections at this time while wolves are just beginning to recover in our region. And that was part of a nationwide effort where over a million comments, the most comments ever associated with an Endangered Species Act proposal submitted to the government. So there's clearly widespread interest nationwide in this debate right now.
They've had friends for a long time, though. I remember Robert Redford's album of Wolf Sounds and his own speaking about the nature of the wolf back in the 1970s. So this has been a long time coming with a lot of friends, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just widespread support for gray wolf recovery, and it's all about how as we move forward, how we're going to create an environment of coexistence with the wolf back on the landscape. How do we create an environment where wolves are welcome back, where impact to livestock producers is lessened through programs and new techniques that are being used? And the Pacific Wolf Coalition is very committed to a lot of that, to really create an environment that welcomes the wolf back to the Pacific West, because it's been too long. It's been, in California's case, 80 years since we've had wolves back in the state. So it's really an exciting time and requires rolling up the sleeves and working across the aisles to see this majestic species recovered across its range here.
What are some of the remedies that you see, particularly when wolves are making regular predations upon livestock? I mean, there's been a fair amount of this in Oregon, I understand, and the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department has allowed some wolves to be killed for just that reason.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it, as we're learning from neighboring states that have had wolves for 15 years, like Montana and Idaho and Wyoming, is how we best handle our herds and livestock husbandry. You know, there's a lot of tools and techniques that are being utilized that greatly reduces the chance of livestock loss to wolves. And that's, you know, simple things like cleaning up bone piles, not leaving carcass piles out on the landscape that attract wolves in, and, you know, putting up this product called electrified flagry, which shimmers. It's basically these hanging flags around a sheep pen that shimmer and scare off wolves, and there's radio-activated guard boxes that emit a loud signal if a wolf has a collar on. So there's a whole suite of proactive non-lethal tools that are being utilized to reduce conflict, and there's actually been a fund established through the state legislature here in Washington, here in Oregon, and also up in Washington that provides for livestock producers to tap into to utilize these different resources. So it's, again, trying to create an environment to best coexist with wolves now that they're back in the state.
Let us take a call here. We have Nick in Lolita on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Laughlin from Cascadia Wildlands.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
Yes, I was curious about the any connection between Lyme's disease and the spread of the wolf and how the wolf could possibly diminish that.
Interesting. So wolves and deer ticks, which are the source of Lyme disease. Thanks for the call, Nick. Appreciate that. Josh, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I don't have a strong answer to that, but it's certainly something to look into. And you know, Oregon Department of Agriculture might be a resource for that. I know there's a lot of research being done through the state and also Oregon State University on wolves. Wish I had a better answer for you on that one.
All right. So you'd mentioned a couple of times now that there is no wolf pack in the Cascades, and you say that as if it is very important. Why so important do you think to have a wolf pack in the Cascades of Oregon?
Well, without wolves in the Oregon Cascades, we're missing a critical component of them. You know, the apex predator species that belongs here is not currently here. You know, and for, you know, for human sake as well, you know, to be able to go out to Crater Lake National Park or Three Sisters Wilderness and not be able to hear the howl of a wolf while you're camping is an experience that's diminished. So, and not to mention the ecosystem balance that's missing as well. So there's a real niche to be filled in terms of gray wolf recovery here in the Cascades.
But Josh, when you talk about people not being able to enjoy the howl of a wolf, that would scare the bejesus out of some people as well.
Yeah, you know, we're continuing to redefine our relationship, and part of what we at Cascadia Wildlands do is educate people about wolves, that they're not bloodthirsty animals like they've been portrayed in Little Red Riding Hood and Big Bad Wolf over the years, but they're actually an incredibly curious species that operates a lot like a human family, with a mother and father and uncles and aunts and pups, and all have a different unique role within the pack. So there's really a lot of education that needs to continue to happen to redefine this relationship that's been soured over the past literally hundreds of years that dates back to Europe.
But you're convinced we can live in harmony without excessive fear for livestock or children?
Oh, absolutely. There's not one solution to keep livestock loss from happening, but there's a whole suite of tools that we're beginning to utilize, some that work better than others. And human fatalities associated with wolves. I think over the last 100 years, there's been two associated with gray wolves, one in Alaska and one in British Columbia, or Saskatchewan, I believe it was. That's really just been blown out of proportion, and wolves are wild animals, and you know, just like bears, they're part of the American West. You shouldn't approach wolves just like you shouldn't approach bears. They're part of our identity here in the West, and we should respect that and recognize it.
Here's another phone call from Marilyn in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking wolves with Josh Laughlin from Cascadia Wildlands.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Or good morning. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I have friends who have stock on the rangelands, like in the forest where they allow the cattle to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they have told me that the wolves that they bring down from Canada to replenish ours are not the same as what were here originally. And they have much more problem with them attacking the herds and killing more than they need and not just killing for what they need.
Okay, interesting perspective. Thanks for that, Marilyn. Appreciate it. So where did the wolves come from? You did mention they brought the species in from Canada.
Yeah, there's been a lot of misinformation, as the caller just alluded to, that's been populated in the discourse, and there's no scientific support for the position that the caller just mentioned. In fact, it's been used to confuse people and to oppose gray wolves in the region. But if you ask any credible wolf scientist, they'll disregard that allegation.
No differences in behavior then from what was there historically, you're saying?
Correct.
All right. You had mentioned that that the Cascades could use the apex predators back in the system, but if you're favoring wolves back in the system, would you also favor the reintroduction of grizzly bears, because they lived in the Cascades at one point in Oregon too?
Yeah, it's a lot of these questions in the discourse. It has to do with social systems, really. Are we prepared to have grizzly bears back in the region? Do we have the suitable habitat and the what's the human density around that suitable habitat? So there's a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered prior to just proceeding with a gray wolf recovery effort. But by all means...
A grizzly bear recovery effort, you mean, yeah.
Excuse me, a grizzly recovery effort. But by all means, if those if indications point to yes, absolutely, we'd like to see grizzly bears back in the region. They were, again, like wolves, systematically exterminated and have a spot here in Cascadia.
Okay, Josh, just a few seconds left. What happens from here now that the comment period is closed on the gray wolf protection removal?
We're going to continue to pump public comments to the Obama administration opposing this premature delisting, and we're going to continue to roll up our sleeves and fight this one to the bitter end.
All right, there'll be a fight over gray wolves yet to come. Josh Lachlan is the campaign director at Cascadia Wildlands, part of the Pacific Wolf Coalition. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
I appreciate it.